A decade ago, when Marina Warner published her first novel, In a Dark Wood, I found myself wishing she wouldn't write any more of them. Her nonfiction books on the Virgin Mary and Joan of Arc in history and mythology had been wonderful, but her novel was talky and symbol fraught. On the face of its pale action, too many ideas had been fixed like adhesive plasters. She went ahead and wrote a second novel anyway, The Skating Party, not much more satisfying than the first, and then a terrific art book, Monuments and Maidens, which seemed to prove my point. With her third novel, though, she proves a point of her own. The Lost Father, about how three generations of women cope with the paterfamilias who dies on them by mythologizing the reasons for his death, is full of ideas, while at the same time skeptical of them, and full of landscape, from southern Italy to London, New York, and southern California, and full of music, mostly Italian opera, and full of history, which is itself a kind of opera, or at least an operetta, from Mussolini's fascism to Hollywood's hedonism. The Lost Father is also full of life, amplitude, lyric exaltation, and an amazing number of animal and marine life metaphors. Dolphins, spiders, mollusks, butterflies, hedgehogs, beetles, toads, the lace-making coral under the sea, an ostrich, and a worm. The ecology of memory. Anna Pitagora, who works in contemporary London for a museum of ephemera, is writing her mother's memoirs for her. Fantina, the mother, has led Anna to believe that her Italian grandfather David, as a student, had been wounded in a duel over his sister's honor. From complications of this wound, he's supposed to have died 20 years later, after leaving Italy for New York and returning with four female children to practice law, sing baritone, and miss the point of Mussolini. This is the family myth. From David's own diaries, we begin to suspect that it may be as unreliable as the Pitagora family superstitions about sex and religion. For all his purported gentleness, David was too much in love with pistols. Besides, everybody in the novel is always reminding us that everything is make-believe, like opera, and that make-believe is better than happenstance because it's more beautiful. Reality, says David, will never do. Family memories are in fact a kind of museum of ephemera, like Anna's candy wrappers and junk food cartons. From them we fabricate an appropriate past, our notions of love and honor. By reinventing their father, David's daughters hid from themselves. His granddaughters need to penetrate this mystification, and the mystifications as well of the astonishing sisterhood that mothered them so variously, in order to be free adults. Before Anna can see the men in her own life clearly, she must look David in the face, and that face is not at all the picture that's been handed down. What if survival were at stake, not honor, at the dawn of the myth? Not sex, but politics. Not romance, but revolution. What truth does Anna want or need? Warner gets tricky at the end, as if playing with these ghosts, as if to suggest that ideologies themselves, socialism, fascism, feminism, might be superstitions too. She's so wise now as a novelist, she no longer tells us what to think. She sings a bit and winks and spreads her lacework fan like coral, fragile, fine-spun, intricate in time's waters.